these guys have any idea what they're doing? Probably not. But that won't stop them from making picks. This is BZ Money.
All right, we head to week 13 in the NFL. You know, the Killer Bees in BZ Money, we hand out winners each and every, well, I guess I shouldn't say winners. We hand out at least a winner each and every week. So, we've been doing this for 12 weeks. We've had at least one winner every single segment of BZ Money. We're minus 305, though.
So you're patronizing the listeners now like you patronized me when I came up with the only winner last
week. I don't
want to
hear that. I was on your side.
You patronized me for
$5. I was on your side. I took the team that you picked. Meanwhile, y'all pooed all over my Houston Texans take Miami pick. We didn't place that bet at all, and I'm supposed to listen to your soft story?
I disagreed with two of y'all's bets last week that cost us money.
Guys?
Yeah, you're right. Cost you money.
We were rolling heading into last week.
Well, it's okay. You guys vetoed me. You overruled me on
didn't.
Two of them.
I sided
two
on the Vikings. How did
that
I overrule
one.
You?
But on two of the other ones, you guys overruled me, and I said, well,
you
then I'm out.
You only get two picks.
What are you talking about?
You pick two games each week.
It's a vote. It's a vote. And so I was overruled, outnumbered in the vote
by somebody
on two
else's
that
pick.
I disagreed. Yeah, I was outnumbered on two of them.
And meanwhile, I sold to y'all Miami over Houston. Y'all said no. I was willing to put the bankroll on it. Y'all said no. So I netted $5 going with your pick. Meanwhile, y'all negated $700 by not picking my Miami Dolphins
pick. You still got credit
so,
to make
up. One of these weeks, we're going to give Jeremy his $700 bet. We're going to lose everything.
No, we're not. We're going to win because I always bet against the Houston Texans. It's been a winning recipe.
That was mine for a couple weeks, but
not last week.
I didn't do it last
week.
Week I admitted it.
What's your first game that you want to sell to us?
I'm going to sell to you the fact that, as we like to talk about, we know our team's best. I'm going to sell to you that the Green Bay Packers, whether Rodgers plays or not, is going to beat the Chicago Bears this weekend. And the fact that I don't know if they're just wondering if the Packers are going to play anybody or not, even if Rodgers doesn't play. But 3 points at Chicago for the Packers, and Justin Fields is probably not
going
to play.
No, he's going to play. He's upgraded to a full participant in Thursday's practice. Just pulled it up. Practiced in full 4 hours ago.
Okay, well, I'll see. We'll see, because they were still contemplating, but then Peterman got hurt. All their backups were getting hurt during warm-ups, for goodness sake.
Isn't that a character in Seinfeld, Peterman? I think that's Elaine's boss.
Let me just remind you that Aaron Rodgers is still renting out Soldier Field while he owns the team. He wants to play. He wants to get another win. As much as nothing else matters on the schedule, I think the Packers win this game by more than 3 points.
Man, Branham, the computer models had the Packers winning this game by 4. I don't feel very good about this. Personally, I'm not betting this game. You've usually been right about the Packers, though. You've usually been, unlike Brendan, who's always wrong about the Lions, you're always about Green Bay.
Collectively,
so I'll side with Blankers here.
We're wrong about the Lions.
No, you sell it, and every time that you sell it one way, that loses.
That's not true.
You're
you guys
always
have gone
wrong
me.
About Detroit. Blank's always right about Green Bay.
Anyways, I don't love this if Fields plays. But yeah, he's been right more often than not. He also literally saved us with his $5 bet last week. Without that $5 bet, it would have been, we would be lower than we've ever been.
Well, I saved us because I sided
with
Blankers. No, I was the voting party.
Again, just taking it because of that. I want you guys to, if you don't believe
it,
I don't want you to do it.
I hope that y'all patronize me and pick the games that I tell you how to pick.
I am out, so you guys decide what you want to do.
$20, Green Bay.
Okay.
Minus the 3 points on the road at Soldier Field. Game I'm going to sell to you. Look, I've been trying to go to this well until it runs dry. Y'all aren't letting me, even though we'd be winning money hand over fist if y'all just listen
to
me.
Can you jump in and at least help me here?
Just listen to me.
Do you not like this one, Joel?
Cleveland is going to run away from the Houston Texans this week. And yeah, the Houston crowd really wants the Texans to win. So what? Texans stink. Their roster's brutal. Kyle Allen, not good, even though he might be better than Davis Mills. Deshaun Watson's not even going to have to throw the ball all over the yard. He's probably going to throw it 20 times. What does Cleveland do well? Nick Chubb. They have Kareem Hunt. What does the Texans' defense do poorly? Well, everything. But what do they do more poorly than anything else? Running defense. They can't stop the run. The Browns are going to run wild on the Houston Texans. Give me Cleveland -7.
Brendan, I'm all over this, too, because of the fact that to everything that Jeremy said so passionately, the other thing is Deshaun's new team knows how big this game is, and they're going to want to run it up a little bit to make sure that the statement is made going forward now that they have to deal with him as their franchise quarterback going forward. I think there's more emotion even on the Cleveland side to make sure that they not only win, but they win convincingly. I think it's I think it's at least a 7-point victory.
I think I have just a little bit more fear than either of you about Watson being rusty.
The fans can't play the game, though. That's the biggest problem.
Watson doesn't have to throw the ball.
I don't know what the locker room is going to be.
Yeah, 7 points at home is still a lot. I like it. I like it. I'm on the same side as you guys. I don't know if I'm as confident as you guys, but I also would pick the Browns in this game.
Quarter. Give me a quarter.
That's it?
Sure. I mean, seven is a lot. And I can realize that seven's a lot. You're
That's
a little
fair.
Hesitant.
I thought you were going to try and blow the roof off.
Yeah,
I'll
I did
that.
Too.
Yeah, I'll do 25.
All really, right. All I was doing was hedging on the $300 bet.
Yeah, me too. I thought you were going really crazy.
I bet $300 on Deshaun. Who wouldn't? All right, what do you got, Brendan?
The first one I'm going to go with is the Chargers at the Raiders. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple reasons here. Because my gut actually tells me that the Chargers are the better team.
Mm-hmm.
That line doesn't make sense to me. And the Raiders won last week on a game I didn't think they were going to win. I actually want to side with Vegas for that reason. They surprised.
Oh, gosh.
Honestly, the Raiders surprised me last week. I think the Seahawks are a decent football team. They beat them. I don't think that the Chargers and Raiders game should even be close, but the Raiders are favored. Favored.
This is a fishy line to me. Whenever I look at games and try to predict the score before I even look at the line, and I had it as a really close game, and whenever I looked at this game, I said both of these teams are incredibly disappointing. The Chargers disappoint. The Raiders disappoint. You have two disappointing teams. Whenever I see two disappointing teams with a funny line, you know what I do?
I run the other way.
I don't touch this game. I want no part of two disappointing teams with a fishy line. I don't want to play this.
I completely agree with Jeremy on this one because the minute I saw that, I agree with you, Brendan, that I thought it was a fishy line. And then I thought, this is a game that anything could happen. I don't want any part
of it. The reason that I didn't stay away is because of the Raiders win last week.
You've put too much stock in Seattle, too. Nope. Like, I can't give you Seattle because they beat Seattle.
Seattle's a good team.
Whatever. They're not a good team. They're
NFC good.
I still
am not believing that either.
They're NFC good.
Ah,
sure.
Get it to you.
NFC good.
I don't disagree with that.
All right. So they're not a good team. They're NFC good team.
They're an AFC okay team.
Both not. We're not playing this one, it sounds like. Blankers and I are on the same page. All right. What's your second game, Blankers?
My second game is the Minnesota Vikings, who continue to try and make or want to make statements that they're not just NFC good. And they're at home, and they're only giving 3 to a Jets team with Mike White at quarterback.
Yeah.
I just think the Vikings are ready to make another statement. I think they're going to roll. I think they're going to win. They're going to win by more than 3.
Are we sure Mike White at quarterback isn't an upgrade?
They played the
Bears.
It doesn't matter. The Vegas line
the
here is inflating.
Isn't bad.
It's pretty bad, actually. It's not good. Yes, the Bears' defense is not good.
I thought the offense was their
problem. No. Their defense is not very good. And here's the thing. Is Mike White beat up on a not good Chicago defense, and now Vegas is kind of inflating Mike White. So, like, this Mike White, like, inflation of this number. Look, I think the Jets are pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think they're in the same league, quite honestly, as the Minnesota Vikings, even though they're in the NFC. This is actually a game that I'm betting personally as well. I'll give me Minnesota. I'll give the 3 points. I think the Vikings roll, and they expose Mike White.
Yep, I agree.
I think that we may, like, me versus you two may be the theme of our entire week.
You like the Jets here.
You like the Jets?
I am far and away the most out on the Vikings in this group. I don't believe in the Vikings. I think the Jets, I think this is an even matchup. I want the points if I'm picking either.
Even matchup?
Even matchup in Minnesota?
Yeah, I'd rather have the points.
All right, so we're gonna play this game. But because of Brendan's liking the Jets here, we'll limit the size of the bet. You can
pick
it.
With us?
You want to go 20, 25?
25.
All right, 25. We'll go a quarter on the Minnesota Vikings. Brendan doesn't know what he's talking about. All right, second game that I want to sell is the NFC East. I have two NFC teams going up against each other. So NFC good versus NFC good, they're both NFC good. I look at the football team, and I look at the Giants, and I see the same team. I think that they're both offensively. I think that they both have a pretty good defense. I don't really trust either one to like make this deep playoff run, but I see two even football teams. The Giants are the team that's playing at home, and somehow the Giants are getting points. In this game. Give me the Giants plus the points to beat the football team on Sunday.
I hear all the logic. It all makes sense. My one issue is I think there are two teams that are the same trending in opposite directions.
Mm.
I think the Giants are trending down, and the football team is trending up.
I thought similar. I thought Washington's the hot team. I was like, because
can you be
a
hot team if you have Heinicke as your quarterback?
Right now, Heinicke, I think he's 5-1.
Yes, they're winning games with Tyler Heinicke as he's playing poorly. Yes, that is true.
I don't know that he's playing poorly. He made some throws against the Texans that I was surprised he could make.
It's the Texans!
I get that, but what I'm saying is, look, hear me out. Overall, I think that their defense, and they got Chase Young back, and their defense is staunch. And I think it's a better defense than the Giants' defense. Offensively, I mean, I think that you could say that Daniel Jones is a better quarterback than Heinicke, but I think that their skill position players, it's a, I think maybe advantage Washington.
I'll take Scary Terry over anything the Giants have.
If I had to pick one, I would pick the Giants.
I'll take Saquon Barkley over Robinson or the running back from Washington.
If I had to pick one, I would take the Giants, but I'd rather sit it out.
It sounds like Blankers doesn't want to play
either.
Yeah,
I kind of want to sit that one out.
It's all right. You guys don't like money. That's fine. Brendan, what's your second game?
All right. Another team that I've kind of been railing on, and it's not gone well for me. Miami at San Francisco. I actually want the Dolphins here.
I can't believe you played this game.
San Francisco is a team who I refuse to totally buy into.
Do you know how many points San Francisco's defense has given up over the last 3 games?
I don't believe in anybody in the NFC but the Seahawks.
You might have played the 2 games that I want no part of, quite honestly.
Honestly, do you know how many points that the Niners' defense has given up over the last 3 games?
17.
Zero.
Oh.
Who have they played?
It's more than I thought.
That's an honest question. I don't know off the top of my head.
Not good teams? If they have been good teams, they've been NFC good?
I'm going to have to look that up right now.
I guarantee you Miami scores at least 1 point. Sunday against San Francisco.
Yeah. I feel pretty good. I feel good about the Miami offense. I like the points I'm getting.
I think it's a tight game.
San Francisco plays close games. They don't. They're not going to blow anybody out. Mm-hmm. 4 points is enough.
So does Miami.
But 4 points in a close game is a lot of points.
I think both of these teams are very similar, actually, in terms of like prowess in the NFL. I think we have two very similar teams. This is a game that
I think the Niners are head and shoulders a better overall team than the Dolphins.
I think the Dolphins are freaking good. I don't want to play this. You guys can decide.
It's up to you, Joel.
That's a lot of points, right?
What's four?
It's not a lot. I think it's a lot for the.
Oh, I thought it was higher than that,
but it's not a lot.
I don't want you to think that we like cowered it away from games. I'm just looking up.
No, if you don't like my bets, don't play them.
They shut out the Saints, the Cardinals, and I'm sorry, I misspoke. In their last 2 games, they pitched shutouts. They shut out the Saints and the Cardinals.
That was the Cardinals without Kyler, right?
And they beat Chargers.
The Cardinals scored 10.
Against San Francisco?
Yes.
Maybe more than
it might have been defense. It might have been a defense score. That would make sense.
Oh, it could be, yeah.
Okay. You're staying away from it?
I'm not touching it.
All right, then we'll stay away from it.
Yes. Very good. So we played 3 games, Brendan. Is that right? 3 games for the Killer Bees for BZ Money. Packers -3 for 20. Browns -7 for a quarter. Vikings -3.
We're really nervous after last week.
We're soft. Yeah, all we have is 75 bucks on the line. We're soft.
I actually kind of come away with the same feeling that there should have been another game that we should have.
Yeah, we should have bet Houston. We should have bet Cleveland. Did we not? Oh, yeah,
we did.
We should have bet more money than.
Should have crapped on the Lions.
Should have bet 100. Where did the Bees go right? Where did they go wrong on BZ Money? 713-780-ESPN. ESPN's top 25 under 25. Guess how many Houston Texans are on it? Is that a good thing? Bad thing? Does it show you where the rebuild's going? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I was bright and early there this morning. I saw Dr. O and the staff. I got my B12 shot and got my vitals checked, my blood pressure checked, did all the things I need to do to make sure that I'm staying on the program and I am doing what I need to do to be healthy. You can too. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, you might have some issues going on that you didn't have when you were younger, and you need somebody that can help you throughout the process to get that energy back in your life and take care of those kind of things. That's where Apollo Men's Health came in. Matter of fact, I found out today because I was kidding around with the staff and saying some, you know, basically saying what I say when I do these reads. And I said, you know, even for men, there's cutting edge pellet testosterone therapy where you only have to go into the clinic once every 6 months, but you get energy on a daily basis. And I was corrected. And she told me, no, we have it for women, too. We have women coming in all the time and getting the pellet testosterone therapy, and it saves time from them having to come into the office, and it's now available for both men and women. So there you go. You can go into Apollo Men's Health, and you can get help for whatever you got going on. You're trying to win a gold medal. You're trying to win the day. In order to win the day, you need the energy to be able to take care of the kids and the family and the honeydews and the wife and all the things you got going on with work and working out, those two. That's why you go see them. Go to ApolloMH.com and book an appointment right now. You'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. And then go into that first meeting with an open mind. Tell them where you're lacking. Tell them what you're trying to do. Tell them what your goals are. They're going to put you on a plan that works. They're going to get your results. They take care of people on a daily basis. We take care of you for listening. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first official visit. Do that, and then let the process go from there and see if they can't do what you need them to do to get you where you want to go. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis. Go see the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Talking sports with you, not at you.
It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
ESPN has their top 25 under 25 NFL. No Houston Texans make the list. You have Micah Parsons at the very top, which you can understand that. Somebody's giving him out free dinner in Dallas. Probably every restaurant giving him free dinner in Dallas. The bottom of this list is Antoine Winfield, which pretty sure he played at the Woodlands, the Highlanders, the safety for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. Long story short, no Houston Texans on this list. How many Texans, though, and this isn't a bunch of rookies. We just mentioned Micah Parsons. Parsons is, in his third year now? There's guys on this list, like Sauce Gardner's a rookie. Jonathan Taylor's on this list. Like, dude was the best offensive player last year. C.D. Lamb on this list. So it's not a bunch of rookies. This is top 25, 25, under the age of 25. How many Texans have a chance to be on the list next year, though? Will there be any?
I think they're going to be. There could be. I think there will be one. There could be two.
I think that there's only really, okay, I have a caveat here, because I'll go over, I'm not going to say over there, mm-hmm. but in terms of chance, like people that have a chance.
Wouldn't over-under
be
a
top
half?
25. The over-under would probably be a half, yeah. Over-under would probably be a half. Now, in terms of like players that have a chance to land on this list, I'll go more than two, because I have a feeling that your two are Damian Pierce and Derek Stingley
correct.
Jr.
That is those, absolutely correct.
And look, I would agree that both of those guys have a chance to be on this list. Would I bet that either guy gets on the list? Probably not. But I believe that on this roster, those are the two that have the best chance and, quite frankly, the only chance. I don't think that Jalen Petrie is a safety because he plays the safety position would be on the list. Like, Antoine Winfield's one of the best safeties in football, and he barely cracked the top 25. So I think Petrie's kind of screwed because of the position that he plays. Kenyon Green hasn't really showed you what you were hoping to see from him that could potentially right. land him on a top 25 list as soon as next year, maybe down the road, but as soon as next year, no. So those are the two that I would have as well. Damian Pierce, Derek Stingley Jr. The one wrinkle that I would have of how there could be a third one, franchise quarterback that's an absolute stud. If they draft Bryce Young, and Bryce Young the next like next year, the first 10 weeks is lighting it up and he looks like a rookie of the year candidate, he's going to make the top 25.
Yeah, no doubt. I think you're right. Look, I thought about this for a while and thought, you know what? Green and Petrie. Petrie definitely would qualify as a guy that could make it next year, but Green and Petrie have completely slipped and fallen in the last several weeks to where they've been exposed a little bit. I'm hoping Petrie's just, he's hit a wall in his first season with all these games and the grind of the NFL, different than from college. With Green, it's going to take some work. So I think Green is definitely off the list. I think in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, is it fair to say Petrie would have been someone that you would have considered?
I think the position hurts him. The position hurts
and
him.
And his size at the position.
Like, I think highly of Petrie. I think Jalen Petrie is going to be a really good football player. But if you look at this top 25 list, there's not many safeties. Like, you have Winfield that cracks the top 25 and just barely. He's 25th. There's not another safety on this list for, you know, top players under the age of 25. So the position, I believe, hurts Petrie than like more than Petrie relative to the rest of the NFL.
Okay, I think that's fair. But I think that we also know that, especially at that position, if you get a guy that makes a few plays that makes you take notice, like he, you know, he brings the wood and really drops a few guys and then makes a, you know, a play here or there in the pass game to that's borderline spectacular or a sack, right?
Uh-huh.
And then people start going, oh, whoa, maybe they really got something there. Because we saw it because we watched every play of every game of the Texans. I think because the Texans were so bad as a team, not enough people paid attention to how he played early in the season. And I'm with you. I like him a lot. I think that he has the potential to be on this list, maybe not next year, but in the next 2 years. But I'm a little concerned with the drop-off that's happened recently.
I think only the draft class of last year are guys that you can look at that would be potentially on this list next year. 713-780-ESPN, do any of these Texans have a chance to be on this list next year? But I think you would go down with the ones that we named. Damian Pierce, Derek Stingley, the most likely on this current roster. Nailing a draft pick. Like Micah Parsons, I said he was in his third year. He's in his second year.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a dude who's the number one on the list, quite frankly. If you were to hit on like, you know, there's not many Micah Parsons going around, but you could hit on the Cleveland Brown pick. Maybe it's one of the better receivers in the entire NFL. Somebody checks it in, John Mechie. It's going to be hard for John Mechie, if he's playing opening day next year, to crack this list next season, because you're looking at 12 weeks for a dude who's never played football before that's going to have to turn a lot of heads and, you know, wasn't one of the top receivers picked in the draft this past season. So Mechie would be pretty far down that list. I would go probably Pierce Stingley, because Pierce with this team has a better chance to put up stats. And a lot of times corners have, you know, a difficult time putting up stats and showcasing. Then I would go whoever you draft at number one, especially if it's a quarterback. If it's a quarterback, I might even jump him over Stingley. And then I'd probably go Petrie ahead of Kenyon Green. Now, two drafts ago, there's no one really on that draft class 2 years ago that I think have a chance to make it. Like, people would point to Nico Collins. I don't think Nico Collins is ever going to be in consideration for top 25, under 25. I think Nico Collins' ceiling as an NFL football player is a solid number two receiver.
Yeah, and I think you nailed that. I mean, look, I don't ever expect him to be on this list, but I think in order for the Texans to be where they plan on being sometime soon, the better chance for someone to be on this list at wide receiver is someone that has yet to be on the Houston Texans roster or in the NFL, probably. You're probably going to draft at some point in the next 2 years your wide receiver one, and you're going to put a wide receiver with the skill set capable of making this list and also capable of making your franchise quarterback successful.
Yeah, like Quentin Johnston, who is the receiver at TCU. Some people, I've seen him like kind of mock to the Texans. I think mocks are funny in December. I like to mock mocks in December. But if the Texans were to land a receiver one in this draft as well, maybe it is Quentin Johnston, and Quentin Johnston from day one is Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, then you're looking at that dude potentially being a top 25 under the age of 25 as soon as next season. So I think the Texans have some contenders to be on this list. I think the number that you said at half, I think, would be an interesting conversation. Do the Texans have one player on the top 25 list under the age of 25 next year? I think we laid out the candidates perfectly. Dameon Pierce, Derek Stingley, the pick that you have next season, your pick, the Browns pick, and then maybe Jalen Petrie, and then to a lesser degree, maybe Kenyon Green. 713-780-ESPN. Anybody else in consideration for the Houston Texans that could be on this list next year? 713-780-3776. Also, is this a fair way to judge a rebuild for an NFL organization? Is it fair to judge the Texans rebuild this way? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, Texans have no players on this top 25 under the age of 25. Could they next year? Pierce is an option. Stingley's an option. King of Twitch says Stingley has shown nothing. I disagree with that. Look, I believe that Lovie Smith, and we said this pre-draft, that if they draft a corner, it's not a great system to be in if you're a corner, because you're going to be sitting back in zone more than pretty much any defense in the entire NFL, and the Texans have proven that to be true, even though Lovie Smith will get snappy with the media saying, oh, all we do is play. You guys think that all we do is play zone. You do.
Pretty close.
You do, Lovie. You play zone just about more than any other team in the NFL. Stingley, though, in man-to-man, again, this is a very small sample size, hadn't done it a lot. Stingley hasn't allowed a touchdown this year, man-to-man. So, like, Stingley has shown flashes. Has he shown Sauce Gardner flashes? No, absolutely not. Sauce Gardner's probably going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year.
And I said there was, you know what, we were going to compare, and people around the league were going to compare, and it's right to compare Sauce Gardner and Stingley because they were so closely rated coming out and so closely drafted. And we kept saying, look, the biggest reason why we would lean Sauce over Stingley is the health concerns with Stingley. Foot, but also you have to wonder in the discussions and how, regardless of however it seems the relationship is between Lovie and Caserio, at a certain point you say, hey, look, we're playing for more than just this season. We need to make sure we see who we've got. We saw what we've got in Pierce. We're seeing what we're getting out of Christian Harris. You know, we've seen good and bad from Green and the guys we talked about, like Petrie. We need to see everything that we could see about Stingley. So if he does get back on the field again, and it should have happened already, you need to get him in some man-to-man situations. So, one, he can get his feet wet. He might get burned a few times. But you really get a better understanding of who he is and who he could be.
Stingley's a good football player.
I agree.
I'm sorry, but Stingley's a good football player. Has he had a better year than Sauce? No. Is he in a defense where he can showcase his abilities? No. He's got a governor on him. And has he shown that he can shed the label of being injury prone? No. There's a lot of concerns about Derek Stingley, but to say that he hasn't shown anything, I think that that's just fabricated and far from the truth. 713-780-ESPN. 1185 says Mechie. Multiple people have said Mechie and how he had such a great, you know, storied career, got injured his final year at Alabama for some of the year, and then, of course, leukemia, and apparently he's all things are looking good on that front. You expect him to be a Houston Texan next year. I don't look at John Mechie as a wide receiver one in the NFL. I think, like, whenever they drafted him, I was thinking the slot, best case scenario. Yeah, I mean, he can play a little bit of both. I'm not saying that he's going to be primarily the slot guy, but I do think he's more of an inside guy than an outside guy. I think he's capable of doing both. I think his strength's going to be inside in the NFL as opposed to outside in the NFL. Sure, you can move him around. Hopefully, you have an offensive coordinator with the creativity to move receivers around. I view John Mechie more as a really good, you know, second best receiver on a team. I think he's going to be a wide receiver three in the slot, like you mentioned. I think he can be a Hunter Renfrow type where he can maybe catch 100 passes a year, like Hunter Renfrow did a year ago. I think that that's like the utmost high ceiling. I never expect John Mechie to be in the CD Lamb class, the Jamar Chase class, the Justin Jefferson class, like some of the other receivers you see on this list. I don't think that John Mechie's potential is to that level.
And I would agree with that. I think that he has more than your average slot receiver's talent and capabilities, but I don't think he has the capabilities to be considered a wide receiver one.
Yep.
I think he is a great complementary receiver and a great receiver to have.
Hopefully.
I think his resume and what he showed in college shows he could be a great NFL receiver in a receiver room with talent, right? He could be one of the two and three most talented receivers in the room. But I don't think he's a wide receiver one. That's why I said in the next year or two, you might see a guy that could make that list as a wide receiver for the Houston Texans if you draft accordingly.
Look at this list of receivers in this top 25. I mean, this is a who's who. Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase. Those are the top two at the receiver position. You scroll down a little bit, you have DK Metcalf, you have Jalen Waddle, you have CeeDee Lamb, and those are your receivers in the top 25. Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's not even on this list. Like, he's honorable mention, and the dude is a stud. So these receivers that are our top 25 under the age of 25, by saying Mechie's not on their caliber isn't like dogging John Mechie. It's just being unrealistic on John Mechie's ceiling, in my opinion.
I wouldn't put Mechie on there either. The only thing is, I think wide receiver is a position where we've seen guys picked in the second round blow up quickly. It's not a ceiling that you see for him, but I think like I'm okay with giving him an outside shot.
He's also going to be playing his first year in the NFL, which but matters in my opinion. Like he's basically going to be a rookie.
List.
Yeah, he's basically yeah. He has nothing that he's shown you quite yet.
Part of what I'm saying is that. And that's why I say outside shot, is that wide receiver is a position where if you are that guy, you can show it quickly. If you are somebody who can make a top 25, under 25 list, I think you can do it in your rookie year. I don't know. It doesn't sound like there's anyone on that list that did.
No.
But I think you can.
Like Olave's not on this list. Garrett Wilson's not on this list.
Like Jefferson probably
Drake
was
London's
after year
not on
one.
This list. Justin Jefferson probably was. Yeah.
Chase, I'm sure
Chase probably
was
now, too. But those are also different breeds. Like Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase were both first rounders that they expected a lot right out of the gate.
DK Metcalf John Mechie's probably wasn't.
Probably not right
he
away.
Was second. I was trying to think of who in that
draft. It took him a couple of years.
Was Metcalf the only one on that list who wasn't a first?
Where did Waddle win the first round, too?
I think so. I think
Well, St. Brown was honorable mention, was not a first. But those, so yeah, they were all
first-round
picks. They were. And Mechie's a smaller receiver, too. Like 5'11", 190.
Right.
Whereas Jefferson, Chase, like these are bona fide number one receivers.
Yeah, those are big guys. Look at the guys from Alabama. Look at Smith, too, with Philadelphia. I mean, you've got guys that are smaller, slighter in build, but they're more the go guys. They're the... They're the burner or they're the
yes.
slot.
Like Waddle. Waddle's right. not. Waddle's right. probably 5'11 or so.
Yep.
But does John Mechie have the shift that Jalen Waddle has? Does he have the quickness of Jalen Waddle? I saw Mechie play quite a bit at Alabama. I wouldn't say that he's shiftier than Waddle, who might be one of the more shifty receivers in all of the NFL. Like, if you don't have that elite size,
yep.
athleticism, like a Chase, like a Justin Jefferson, you better have Tyreek Hill speed or Jalen Waddle quickness. I think Mechie's going to be a good NFL player. I'm not going to put him in the same league as Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill.
No, and I think there's a new day and age in terms of wide receiver ones in this league because I don't truly believe that Tyreek Hill is a one. I think that he is.
Oh, I do.
I think he's a 1A, 1B because he's not that big size, go high point of football. He's just as valuable as any receiver because he does what he does better than anybody else in the league. He can be one of the top 10 receivers in the league, but I don't think he's a true wide receiver one because, to your point, wide receiver ones are the guys that make the tough physical catch. They high point the ball and make those catches. They can still go and get the deep ball, but they can go across the middle just as easily, and they can block, and they do all these things that kind of up the value and up the price tag. I think he got the money because he flat out does something with a skill set that no one else has, with his ability to turn the burners on.
Hill's been over 100 catches, and he's had over 1,200 yards the last 3 years, and he's shown that he can get up close to 1,500. He's shown that he can give you double-digit touchdowns. Tyreek Hill doesn't look like the number one receiver, but the dude's a number one receiver.
I mean, I understand, and look, I'm not going to die on the hill. I'm just saying in
the
terms
Tyreek
of... exactly. Overall, as you look at the landscape of the NFL, you want your wide receiver one has to... You have to have that one special skill like he does with his ability to just flat out outrun everybody. But I think that other guys you look at too, whether they're the physical receiver, because Chase's hands are great, but and the knock on him after he got drafted was he couldn't catch.
Yeah.
But his hands are great, but he's also a physical receiver. He does all those things too, and his yards after the catch are amazing. Other guys, and I think that, you know, to me, a wide receiver one has to have some physicality too across the league. Though if you get a Tyreek Hill, obviously he's your wide receiver one because he can blow the top off of any defense at any time.
Do you think it's fair to look at a top 25 list whenever you're in a rebuild like the Houston Texans are and to use that as a somewhat of a barometer on where you are as a rebuild? Because at some point, if the Texans are a playoff team, they got to have good football players. And if you're a rebuild, it means you're going through some young players. We just rattled off a few young players that the Texans will have here. Currently do. Stingley, Pierce, they have Mechie on the roster, hadn't played it down, of course. Kenyon Green, Jalen Petrie, and then you have all the draft picks that you're coming up in the next few years. At some point, if the Texans are going to be successful in this rebuild, do you think that they need dudes on top 25, under 25 lists?
I think it would show progress. I think it would establish the fact that from the fans' perspective, they're actually handling talent evaluation and drafting correctly. They're getting the guys on the roster that are going to be long-term difference makers for the franchise. I think that that is something to at least, it doesn't have to be the most significant way that you evaluate the talent you have on your roster, but it is one way of saying, hey, we got these guys right. We drafted them or however we acquired them. We got them on the roster, and now we know at that position, we've got someone that's going to be with us for a long period of time.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I think so, too. Like, you have to be able to win in the NFL, you need good players, right? Like, you have to have players that are among the league's best. Like, whenever we look at best teams in the NFL, Kansas City comes to mind. Kansas City's obviously very good because they have Pat Mahomes. You look at Buffalo. Buffalo has Josh Allen. They have Stephon Diggs. They have a very good defense on top of that. And then you look at some of the up-and-coming younger teams in the NFL. You see dudes that are very good that are the like in on this list, quite frankly. Micah Parsons, second year in the NFL. He's on a Cowboys team who's having a good record. You have to have good football players. Same thing with Minnesota. Minnesota's having a really good season. They got Justin Jefferson there, a very young player. Ja'Marr Chase, same thing. At some point, if the Texans are going to be taking a step up, they do have to have players that make these types of lists. And as a rebuilding team, you hope to see it sooner rather than later, especially where the Texans are going to be drafting. If you're picking a dude at number one and you hit with a pick at number one, in two, maybe like 3 years, you need to have those players mentioned amongst the best players at a young age.
It's also kind of intelligent. Like drafting, right? I mean, the way you intelligently construct your team is you're not going to go get a franchise quarterback and then not put the appropriate people around him, right? Like when the Bengals got Burrow, as much as they knew that they were going to need to strengthen the offensive line, they also went and got Chase too because they knew that Burrow, and not only did they have the relationship in college, but Burrow needed a true number one to be able to throw too. And you could get the linemen in free agency and you can construct a line a lot of different ways, mm-hmm. whereas it's a lot tougher to be able to get pinpoint the right guy at a wide receiver one.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of Derek Stingley, doesn't seem like he's going to play again on Sunday. Going to be out for his third game in a row, potentially, probably. Do you need to see Derek Stingley again this season? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking,
unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Derek Stingley doesn't appear he's going to play on Sunday for the Houston Texans to be the third game in a row that he does not play. Do we need to see Derek Stingley again this year? Look, I imagine they've called it a mild hamstring injury. I would guess he's going to play football again this season. But do you need to see Derek Stingley again this year?
Yeah, for the simple fact of the things that we talked about a segment or so ago. I want to see him play more man. I want to see him do some...
Well, look, he needs a new coach for that.
Well, but I think that, look, there's got to be some discussions then internally between the coach and the general manager, too, as it pertains to whether he has any chance of keeping his job for another year or not. And one of them might be to see Kenyon Green develop and Stingley see opportunities where he can, you know, they can get a better evaluation on him by having him do some things that Lovie has been very resistant to want to do. We've seen this happen with Dusty and Click, where maybe it's not the most conventional way to get to a happy medium, but at a certain point, you gave Lovie the freedom to do whatever he wanted to do defensively while you still had a chance to make the playoffs and it was a fresh season and all those other things. But the writing's on the wall now that not only are you not going to make the playoffs, you're going to be the worst team in the league. So at this point, everybody is auditioning. And if you're auditioning guys for their second year, not to say he's not going to make the team, but why not let him give him more opportunities to play man so you can see truly what he can and cannot do?
Because Lovie doesn't believe in it. Like, Lovie doesn't believe that's what
you do. Does
he
believe in wanting his check or wanting to still be the coach of the team, I should say, because he's going
to
get paid?
He thinks that's the best way you could keep his check, to keep his job. That's his
philosophy. But if the general manager tells you it's not and wants to see
more. So you have a meddling GM, though? You think that he's...
Well, you already know you have a meddling GM.
But with Lovie, like, this is kind of a contradiction, though, because Lovie Smith was supposed to come in and not allow Caserio to meddle, not allow Caserio on headset, not allow Caserio to be game planning and coming up with philosophy.
But you know as well as I do, it's like the quarterback decision. At a certain point, there has to be, whether you call it a come to Jesus or a meeting of the minds to where you meet somewhere and compromise and say, okay, look, we went for it. We were doing our best efforts to put our, you know, to play the best defensive scheme we could play to stop guys week in, week out.
Yeah.
But at a certain point now, we know it's not working out. We're not doing the things that we were hoping to be able to do. But I need to see what he can do going forward. I need to see whatever schemes we're going to play next year, whatever we're going to do
future. But if you tell Lovie that,
I know,
you're basically saying you're moving on.
You can't say that, right.
Yeah.
You can't say the schemes part.
Like, Lovie, the difficult thing here is that I think Lovie believes that the cover two is the best defense to play, and that gives him the best chance to win, and that he can't go away from that for the most part. Like, he's going to play a high majority of zone. Because I agree with you. Like, in a perfect world, it'd be great if Stingley can come back in a couple of weeks, and you trot him out there like the Jets trot out Sauce Gardner. You play a man-to-man. You see how good he is. I guess my hesitation is I don't believe that is a possible scenario under Lovie Smith. Because Lovie Smith loves his own.
Then that, I think, will seal Lovie Smith. He will do himself more harm than good, and he will seal his own fate. Because at a certain point, you have to be realistic in your situation as well, going, I still want to coach this team next year, and I want to see this thing keep going forward with me being a part of it.
But even if he's back next year, he's not going to just overhaul his defensive philosophy that he's been married to for three
decades.
And I'm not
saying change it next year when the slate is clean again. But be realistic on who you are this season enough to be able to say, look, you went out in a press conference and said, we play man-to-man. We'll play a little more of it. And so we can see a little bit more, especially as it pertains to Stingley, so we can see a little more of him in that scenario as well as just zone scenario.
But now you're grooming Stingley to play man-to-man, then you're going right back to the zone next year. Like, it's kind of your...
Are you, though? You don't have to.
Lovie would.
Right. Lovie would. That's what I'm saying. But are you? And do you have to?
I don't want Lovie back. So
that's what I'm saying. Caserio doesn't have to tell him and doesn't have, you know, he's trying to get work with him right now.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, he may choose to not work with him anymore. So the defense could change anyway, but you still need to know what he's, you know, how he plays in man to man, and you want to see him do it consistently.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Do you need to see Derek Stingley again this year? I'm actually on the opposite end of this than you are. I don't need to see Derek Stingley again this year. Mild hamstring injury, I think Derek Stingley would be fine going into next year. Do I still have concerns he's injury prone? Yeah, I still have concerns that he's injury prone. But we've seen enough from Derek Stingley this year to know what Derek Stingley Jr. is going to be next year. Like, the scouting report that the Texans have on Stingley is the scouting report that the Texans have on Stingley, whether he comes back again this season or whether he doesn't come back again this season.
So, take Stingley out of this, too. The other thing that I'd like to see, too, is I want Kenyon Green to remain out there, and I want Kenyon Green to work on his pass blocking. And so I'd rather have Kenyon Green working on his pass blocking and still being out there and evaluating him.
So you're throwing it 30 times with Kyle Allen?
I'm not saying 30 times, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, but let me give you the other side of that, which is, would you rather have him working on his pass blocking with Kyle Allen back there, throwing it 30 times, or working on his pass blocking with a guy like Bryce Young back there where he's going to get his head ripped off?
I love your idea in theory. I don't want to like make it sound like I'm nitpicking, even though I am, because what can Kenyon Green develop in that's going to make him a better player as a sophomore? Pass blocking.
Yep.
But it's a domino effect, because him pass blocking now means you have to run less, which means that you're now looking at Kyle Allen throwing the ball 30 times.
Well,
now,
I'm not, but it also said we don't want Pierce to run the ball as sure. much as he was, so that could help.
Again, in theory, I like this idea. And I'm also not in the business of winning games. Like Kyle Allen throwing the ball 30 times, Damian Pierce running the ball 10 times. I know that's some very basic math and doesn't really add up here, but catch my drift here. You have a pass run ratio 3-1, whatever the case may be. Like, I'm not in the business of necessarily winning games down the stretch. I don't really care about winning games down the stretch. I think the most important thing that you can do down the stretch is developing the young players. And I'm not worried about Kyle Allen, Davis Mills in the conversation of young players. I'm worried about Damian Pierce. And Damian Pierce kind of falls into the Stingley category for me. I know what Damian Pierce is entering his sophomore season, whether he runs 100 more times this year or whether he runs 0 more times this year. Kenyon Green needs to develop. Kenyon Green was somebody you took a risk on at number 15 that's got to get better. He has to show more. He has to show progress, and a good way to show progress, I think it's a terrible idea that he's being rotated in at left guard every third series. And Lovie Smith will say, well, it gives us the best chance of win while also being able to develop Kenyon, and he can look at a different, you know, scope and point of view and get better that way. Nah, Kenyon Green needs to go fail, honestly. If Kenyon Green needs to go out there, and if he gets, you know, blocked back into the quarterback like we've seen at times this season, he has to fail. A lot of times you have to fail in order to succeed,
right? We said that
eventually. I hate this little rotation that they have going on. Could it give them a better chance to win statistically, percentage-wise? Yes, probably.
But
the Texans shouldn't be in the business of trying statistically to give themselves the highest probability to win games.
But also, other thing it goes back to, as it relates to the Monday through Saturday, is what we talked about earlier this week again, which is part of Kenyon Green also being out there, regardless of how many times you throw the football, but working on his pass blocking and showing what he can do on Sundays, is he damn well still better be coached up between Monday and Saturday. And I think a lot of times that's where you're going to see a lot of the shortcomings too. You're going to see guys and on this coaching staff that maybe aren't coaching these guys up as well as they should with the young team that they have. So
absolutely,
that's where, again, whether you either expose the fact that the O-line coach isn't doing his job, or you need to emphasize even further, hey, look, we're going to keep doing this. He's going to keep being out there. We're going to stop the rotation BS. He's our guard of the future and the now. So basically, coach him up, work on his pass blocking all week, because that's what he's going to be doing when he's out there on Sunday.
713-780-ESPN, 6383. Texans should not play Stingley and Pierce for the rest of the year. Pierce is your best player. There's no need to keep working him when the O-line has seemed to regress. And Stingley, it's best to let him get healthy before he gets hurt again and possibly become a bust. I think mentioning the bus conversation with Derek Stingley's very, very silly and very, very premature. I understand Stingley has been hurt. I understand he has the hamstring concern. I understand he got drafted by the Texans with injury, a history being a concern. Stingley's a good football player. And Derek Stingley Jr., when he's been on the field, which has been on the field more than he's not, has been a good football player. Have the Texans put a governor on him by playing him mostly in zone? Yes. Is he better? Is he having a better rookie season than Sauce Gardner? No. I'm a Sauce Gardner guy. I wanted the Texans to pick Sauce Gardner, but I'm also not going to just claim victory on that already. Sauce better year one than Stingley year one? Yes. Sauce defensive philosophy is better suited for corners than it is Derek Stingley. He also has got players around him. Like, we got to factor that in, too. The corner opposite of Sauce Gardner, pretty good. I like Stevie Nelson, but he ain't as good as the dude opposite of Sauce Gardner. Secondly, what helps corners more than anything else? When they don't have to cover for a long period of time. How do you not have to cover for a long period of time? By getting pressure on the quarterback. The Texans stink at getting pressure on the quarterback. In fact, I think it's their biggest need. I think an edge rusher is the biggest need for the Houston Texans. And if you get a decent edge rusher and you get pressure on the quarterback, it makes Derek Stingley Jr.'s life so much easier.
Well, I completely agree. And look, I just think that the realistic approach to this, where I get back to the communication between Lovie and Caserio and the coaching staff and everybody else, is I know you can say what we just got done talking about, what they say to the media, and they're trying to win football games and they do all those things. But the realistic inside those four-walled conversations have to be, we are already in evaluation for next season, and we have to evaluate who we have currently, who's coming back, how good they can be and what we need coming up in April. So this is the first step. We know we're not a playoff team. We know we're in a very, unfortunately, a permanent spot, it looks like, to get the number one pick, but in every round of the draft. So we need to make sure we know what we need, what we got, and who we're going after.
See, I think that's why I don't really care if Stingley comes back. Like, if he's 100% and he plays in games, like, fine. I'm not trying to shut him down. But if he's, like, 98% in week 17, week 18, don't play him. You know that Derek Stingley Jr. going into next year is cornerback number one. You know that Damian Pierce going into next year is running back number one. They don't really have to show you anything else to solidify their spots on the depth chart.
But I think we're on the same page. We believe Stingley can play both, and he can play both very, very well. But in the NFL, just to
Are you talking about zone and man-to-man?
Yeah. But I still want to see him on the NFL level as opposed
play
to...
play
more man.
I don't mind that either. I'm just not doing it at the expense of him being 98%. Like, I don't need to see it
that much. But if he's 100% between now and the next two or three weeks...
I'm not saying shut him down.
One, he should be out there, and two, he should be playing more man.
Yeah, I'm not saying shut him down. Right. I'd be more you know, intrigued with the option of Damian Pierce getting, you know, 7 to 8 carries a game. Because, look, Pierce is your RB1 next year. You already know that. You really don't need to see any more. Stop trying to, you know, take down the tread on the tire. 7-8-6-2, let him heal up, rest up, get stronger, evaluate him next offseason. The Texans are going nowhere this season. It's pointless at this point. Same with Pierce. I would give Pierce as little amount of touches as possible. Don't risk a good thing getting injured. I agree with that. I know Blankers agrees with that, too. Also, it's not even so much, like, the risk of injury. It's also just the body count. Like, you know that running backs in the NFL have a certain amount of hits that they can take. And once they get to a certain cap number, a certain figure of how many hits they're taking in the NFL, it starts to go downhill, and it starts to go downhill fast. Like, you want Damian Pierce at full strength for contract years 2, 3, 4, and then you kind of got a decision to make with Damian Pierce, because I don't believe in paying for running backs in the National Football League.
No, I mean, that's obviously the new trend. As much as we talk about trends with wide receiver ones getting, you know, even overvalued more so than ever before, running backs, the exact opposite. I mean, you can get running backs, I hate to say it, but a dime a dozen in the third, fourth, fifth round that turn out to be, you know, running back ones.
7-8-6-2, Texans should draft Bryce Young in on one receiver pickup and then pick up Odell Beckham and let him work with the young receivers. Odell Beckham has as much interest being a Houston Texans as he did being on that flight the other day where he got kicked off. There is no way Odell Beckham Jr. would come to the Houston Texans. 713-780-ESPN. Most Fridays at 2, play a game called Who Said It. It's taken over the city. We listen to quotes from other ESPN 97.5 personalities, Brendan Regis' quotes, and then we guess who said it, and we listen who did. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.